Thank you, Brother Wendell. And thank you for setting everything up for tonight. I appreciate all you did. I know a few of you here from the camp and from the thrift store and just from other times we've met. But for those who don't know me, my name is Paul Wagstaff, and I go to Foothills Fellowship Church in Westminster. Like Brother Wendell had said, I work down at the Fairplay Boys Camp. I do the night security down there. I've been down there about 17 years. That in itself, in my life, is truly a miracle, because as I'll share later on, in my old life, I just could not hold a job, could not keep a job, went from job to job, and there was probably well over 100 different jobs I had in my lifetime before I arrived at the, before I arrived at the boys' camp. And just getting into the boys' camp was truly a miracle in itself, how God worked through J.D. Miller to get me into that place. But it's been a blessing ever since I've been there. And I also want to introduce my family tonight, my wife Chrissy, and I'll start with the oldest is Elizabeth and Jacob, David, Mary, and Joshua. They've been truly a blessing in my life. My wife has an incredible story herself, and if you ever have time someday, she'd love to share it with you, but just what God has done in her life also. But I'll just start back from the beginning. I was born in a small town in Dover, Ohio, probably 20 minutes away from Holmes County, January of 1965. I never even heard of Holmes County or the Mennonites or anything until just a few years ago when I first got saved. 1993 was the first time I ever even heard the word Mennonite. But anyway, I was born in Dover. I actually lived in New Philadelphia, Ohio for the first 4 years of my life. Then we moved from New Philadelphia to Dover, Ohio. I'll share a little bit about growing up. My dad was a, I did not grow up in a Christian family, but I do feel that it was a loving family. My mom and dad were together for about 50 years before my dad passed away about 4 years ago. My dad was a very successful businessman. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. I had two older brothers. One lives in Atlanta, Georgia, and one lives in, I would say, San Jose, California, Northern California. It's truly a miracle, too, because me and my wife are the youngest in our families, and to this day, we are still the only ones that I can truly say that we are saved in our family right now. Why God chose us, that's because of His love and His grace. I can't explain that. But I do stand here before you tonight all because of Jesus' love and His grace in my life and also my family's life. And all the praise and glory I share tonight from where I was and where He brought me from and where I'm at today is all, it's all about Jesus. There were so many times I tried to change and do things different, but I never could on my own. I led a very sinful life in my old life. You know, Satan has a way of making sin look a lot of fun, but he never shows you the dead end. And there were so many times where I just tried to do it on my own and I couldn't. And it was only when I fully surrendered to Jesus one day, and I ended up at a place in southern Indiana called Fresh Start, and I was almost 30 years old, where God really got a hold of me and started changing my life. But getting back to Ohio, we moved to Dover. I still remember, I was 4 years old, I still can remember seeing the first man walk on the moon. That's one of my earliest things I can remember as a young child. But in my life, in my family's life, my dad being a big businessman he was, we had a lot of what I would say cocktail parties. My dad entertained a lot of clients on the weekends, a lot of guests. at our house, my mom was always hosting. There was always alcohol. Everybody smoked cigarettes in those days. Trying to think back. I guess one early memory I have was I used to go around to different friends of my dad's. And my dad would let me do this sometimes too. Like if I would do something good or help them out in a certain way, if my dad would have like a beer there, I would always go and ask him for a sip of it. And that just continued to increase as I got older. But I even remember going on camping trips in Ohio. Oh, I was probably 7 years old. We used to go to this place called Seneca Lake. And all my dad, mom and dad's friends would be there. Everybody would be drinking. Everybody would be getting drunk. And I remember a few times where some of the men would get so drunk that they would lose their wallets or their keys or something. So they'd come find me, and I'd go and find these things for these people. And so as a reward, they would always have a drink or a beer there, and they'd always let me have a drink. And, you know, I just got, my body just started getting used to that as I got older. As the years went on, we moved to Pennsylvania, but I remember many times in my house, there was always either my dad had beer or he had a full bar of mixed drinks, and I would go and sneak and just try different things, whiskey, rum, you know, you name it, I tried it. But when I was 9 years old, my dad got a big job promotion in Pennsylvania. He was put in charge of a company called Ingersoll Rand, and this is 1974. And I think that was pretty much the big turning point in my life. Up until that time, I had a lot of friends. I was very popular in school. I lived in a neighborhood in Ohio where me and my brothers had kids our own age that we could always play with. I mean, it was a huge neighborhood. I mean, everybody was always outside. I mean, it was just a lot of good memories. But once we moved to Pennsylvania, that's when things really started changing and going downhill. It's really hard to describe, but just being an outsider, I moved to a very rough town back in those days. It's a little town called Shippensburg, Pennsylvania. I guess it's about 30 miles from Gettysburg. But it was a kind of town where the men worked really rough jobs, and there were a lot of drinking establishments in that town. And they kind of raised their sons to be kind of rough and tough, and that's, you know, that's the way they thought, that's how somebody made it in this world. Me being the outsider, I got there in the fourth grade. Fourth and fifth grade was just completely different experience. People just verbal abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse. But by the time I got to the sixth grade, I went to a different school for just the year for the sixth grade from the elementary school I was going to. And literally every single day that I can remember, we used to have three recesses in those days. I remember morning, lunch, and then afternoon. And there was always a fight or more than one fight going on, a physical fight going on out at recess every day, where one guy was trying to prove he was tougher than the other guy. I mean, this was literally where the teachers did not care. They turned the other way. They didn't want to be involved with it. So, and these were not just, you know, push here, push there kind of fights. These were knockdown, drag-out fights where people got hurt and got hurt badly. I remember every day, I mean, literally almost every day, just being in a fight, mainly just a matter of survival, just trying to defend myself more than anything. It actually got to the point where, and I believe that this was even God working in my life back then, I got so sick of the fighting that I just stopped fighting people. If they came at me, I'd walk away. I mean, I heard the worst names in the world, you know, and I got the worst reputation for being somebody that didn't stand up to fight somebody else, because that was just a very big thing in that school and in that town. But I guess even then, that's when the bitter feelings really started growing in my heart towards these people. All I could dream about was the day that I could move out of this town, either go back to Ohio or just go somewhere where these people didn't exist. But as I got into junior high, then I got into playing some basketball. My dad even sent me to some basketball camps. I really enjoyed that. I played on the team for a few years. But by the time I was 16, that kind of all ended because I started getting in with a group of people that was really into drinking and drugs, and that was the kind of lifestyle I started leading. I guess when I was about 14 or 15, I started hanging out with some guys that were the partiers of the school. And even at that age, I kind of fit in with these people where they didn't mind coming, picking me up and taking me to their parties. And I really started taking different kinds of drugs. I started off taking pot, smoking pot, and there was cocaine, and there was all kinds, but I won't go into all that right now. But anyway, that seemed to be getting worse. That was going on the weekends and stuff. And then by the time I was 16, I had my oldest brother was in the Air Force in Florida. And I just wanted to get away. I had a lot of trouble. My parents really tried to help me. I mean, they sent me to a psychiatrist. They didn't know what was going on because they didn't believe all the bad stuff that was going on at school, because home life and the school life was completely different. It really was. But my parents were always kind of people that you just kind of didn't talk about your problems. You kind of swept everything under the rug. And you never told my mom any kind of bad news because she just didn't know how to handle it. But anyway, I went down to Florida when I was 16 and spent the summer down there with my brother. My parents thought that would do me some good, but it actually just really reinforced my partying life at such a young age. I started hanging around with all the friends of my brothers who were in the Air Force at the time, and they would get me into all these bars and nightclubs, and I even remember going into my first strip clubs when I was 16 years old. It just, that whole summer was nothing but just a blur when I look back on it now. We went to the beach every day just about and partied down there, and just went on and on. And then when I got back to school here, you know, got back to Pennsylvania, here it was again. I had to face all these people again. And for some reason, I shied away from everybody, so I never really connected with anybody. But after that summer, I came back, and I connected with these three guys that were kind of my same age. One guy was in my same grade. He turned out to be my best friend in high school, but we had this little hangout place that we partied on the weekends, and then that kind of started turning into the weekday nights. I mean, this was almost turning into almost a 7-day-a-week thing where I was either drinking or smoking pot or doing something every single day. I usually was pretty good at covering things up with my parents and my brothers. They didn't really suspect too much, but I do remember when I was in a junior in high school that year, me and my drinking buddy found a bar in the next town over that served us. You know, the drinking age is 21, but they served us. They never once asked us for ID. So we found this place, and I pretty much spent my whole junior year with me and my buddy at this bar, just like pretending, you know, my parents had an extra car that they let me drive my junior year. So I'd pick up my buddy and we'd head over there in the morning and drink all day and shoot pool. And by 3:30 we'd get home, and then I'd go lay down for a couple hours and get up and go have supper. And my parents just never, you know, they thought I was at school all day, and I just, you know, I lied to them all the time and, you know, put on this big act. But anyway, after my junior year, then my senior year began, and I spent the first week at this, you know, partying with some people, and I didn't show up at school, and I got in trouble. They did finally catch me at the school and let my parents know. And anyway, it just got to the point where they were just making me go to the school, and I just things had never changed from there. I mean, I literally hated that place and the people that I went to school with there. Now, I do, you know, confess when I got the fresh start years later, through Jesus, I was able to forgive all these people. But back in those days, it was just something that I just accepted. And my number one dream, my number one goal was just to get out of that town, you know, whatever it took. So I was almost 18, and my first week in my senior year, I came up with this plan that I was going to take the car, and I stole my dad's credit card, and I had some money, not very much, but I had a few hundred dollars, and I just got in the car and started driving. I don't know if y'all know, every non-Christian 17, 18-year-old male's dream is either to be a professional athlete or to go to Hollywood and become a famous movie star one day. So that was my dream. I was going to go to Hollywood and just, you know, go to the, live out on the beach and try to be a movie star. But, I mean, that's such a false hope and a false dream. But anyway, about halfway out there, I can't really kind of a long story short, I got detoured, and I ended up in Denver, Colorado. So when I got to Denver, the first night there, you know, I just had the car and had the money and the credit card, and I'm sitting in this bar having a drink, and this started telling this story to this other guy, you know, what was going on. He said, oh, I happen to know this guy that needs a roommate. And I was like, oh, great, I need a place to stay, so... So he introduced me to him. He let me come right in, and come to find out here, it didn't take me very long to figure it out, that this guy was a big-time drug dealer, the guy that I was living with, and he wanted me to kind of help him. So he gave me a place to stay, and then I helped him sell his drugs. And so that went on for, I'm going to say, a good couple months or so. We also, there was also this kind of big group of drug dealers that we all knew, and we got really, really wasted one night and went and ripped off a Burger King for the money, for the thrill of it. But it was just stupid things we did and sinful things we did. But we're sitting there one day in this guy's apartment, and we're all sitting around partying, and all of a sudden we get a knock on the door, open the door, and there's these three FBI agents sitting right there, standing right there in their suits, with their guns ready to... So they came and busted the... They were after the big drug dealer, more, but they took all of us in, and they knew we were a part of the Burger King fiasco, too. But, you know, 17 years old, almost 18, I'm being let off in handcuffs, scared out of my mind, didn't know what I was going to do. Thousands of miles away from home, from my parents, and... Because they kind of gave up on me after that. They knew I was there. I'd called them, but they were so upset at me about what had happened. I couldn't blame them. But anyway, by the time I got down there to the FBI headquarters there in Denver, they brought me in a room. And because of my age and because I wasn't the big dealer that they were after this other guy and some other people there too, they decided to let me go as long as I decided to go back to Pennsylvania to be with my parents, because my parents were, they were in contact with them and letting them know that I was heading back that way. So anyway, I ended up going back there and then got together with my dad, and I just said, you know, we just decided I would drop out and get my GED. I finally felt relieved, just not ever having to, you know, go to that school again. My next thing was to just, how do I get out of this town? But, my dad's, part of the deal was my dad said I had to join the Army to, he thought that that would, you know, straighten me out. And I was in the Army for about 2 months, and they sent me home. Because I was pretty much, even by then, I was a full-fledged alcoholic by then. And they knew there was something wrong with me, and I wasn't the soldier that they wanted to be, wanted me to want for them. So they just kicked me out and sent me home. And I still praise Jesus to this day for that happening. And I still try to counsel the young men, young Mennonite, young Christian men that have these ideas of going into the military. And I just share my story with them on what I experienced in the military. It's not of God. And so anyway, once I got out of there, I came back home for a little while, but then it was just decided that, you know, I was going to do my own thing. My parents knew that. They weren't going to, you know, they had their own lives. My older brothers were doing okay, so I just kind of went out on my own after that. For the next, up until I was about 21, between 18 and 21, I pretty much went from town to town. Pretty much hung out, like I said before, bars, nightclubs, strip clubs. That was my whole life. That's all I knew. You know, tried to sell drugs for a while, all kinds of different things. Did odds and end jobs wherever I could find them. My main job was working in restaurants because that was always, they'd always pretty much hire you on the spot. But by the time I was 21, I ended up in Atlanta, Georgia. And kind of a long story short there too, but 21, big city of Atlanta. You know, I was legal to drink now, you know, didn't have to have a fake ID or anything like that. Man, I just went crazy. I went to every place you could think of over there. And this was probably about 1986. And I was working a construction job when I first got there. So I was making probably the most money I ever made in my life. And so I was had enough to get me a car. And anyway, long story short, this has kind of started my whole downward spiral of with the law enforcement. I was arrested several times between the ages of 21 and the age of 30. DUIs, drinking and driving. Used to be the poster child, I really believe, for the, if you looked in the dictionary and looked under drinking and driving, I think you would have saw my picture there or something. But, shoplifting, stealing, whatever it was. I used to steal liquor out of liquor stores and out of grocery stores, beer, you name it. I was always coming across, somehow I always ended up meeting the drug dealers wherever I went, and every dime, every penny I had went to these guys. Because every time I went out there, I was always trying to get the next high, the greater high. And you could just, it actually got to a point where I got these things called blackouts. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of this or not, but it's where you drink so much the night before or the day before. When you wake up the next day, you don't even know how you got there. You don't remember anything of the previous day. I remember several times looking for my car I was driving, if I was borrowing a car from somebody. You know, I'd wake up in a field, no car to be found. I remember waking up in a prison cell, not remember being arrested the night before. It kind of went on and on. I tried to go to like AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. That was not the answer. You know, if you even bring up Jesus there, they were not very big on that. So it was pretty much on your own. So I'd stay sober for a little bit, but then I'd be right back at it again. It kind of became a revolving door after that between the ages of 21 and 28 up to 30, where it was either prison, living on the streets, staying with complete strangers, living with women that I met in bars, wherever I could crash, somebody's couch somewhere, it didn't matter. And pretty much by then, my family had given up on me completely, and I understand why. You know, my dad tried to help me several times, but I always ended up going right back to what I was doing. But, let's see, it was 1993, April of 1993. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and I was on what's called probation. And where you can't leave the state. It's kind of like where they don't put you in jail, but if you get arrested one time or leave the state or something, they put you right back in jail. And I had 3 years left on my sentence of some of the things that I had done. So I took off from there because I was living on the streets, and I called an old buddy of mine. That's one thing I can always say, that God gave me a good memory, because I could always remember phone numbers and birthdays and anniversaries and all that stuff for some reason. I still can to this day, and I know that that's God. God has always blessed me with that. But I was able to get a hold of this guy after all these years, and he let me come up to Pennsylvania on a Greyhound bus. He sent me the money and everything. And so I got up there, and it didn't take long for him to figure out the kind of basically a bum I was. He kicked me out of his house, and then I ended up on the streets of Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. Anyway, I'm down one night. I actually found a homeless shelter to stay in for a little while, and I'm walking through the streets of Chambersburg one night. I was going to the store or something, and because I still smoked cigarettes even up to then. It was probably 15, 20 years before the Lord took that all out of my life. But there were these group of men witnessing on the circle there in Chambersburg. And I could, for some reason, I could always tell when Christians were witnessing. And I always went up and talked to them. Well, this particular time, I went up and talked to this guy, and his name was John Byers. He was a River Brother up in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. And we're still good friends with, me and my family are still good friends with that whole church up there to this day. But I started sharing my story with him, and well, this unbelievable thing happened. He offered me a place to stay. He really thought that he could help me out, but he lived in a place where he just had a little trailer and he didn't have enough room. So he went to his pastor of the church and asked him, and I went, and this pastor just let me move into his house. And he had two younger daughters, I remember at the time. One was like 16, one was 12, and I'm almost 30 years old coming in off the streets. He didn't know me from nowhere. I mean, I asked him years later. I said, you know, why would you let me move in at that time, you know, for just the safety of your children? You didn't know me. And he looked me right in the face and he said, God told me to do it. And I just, like I said, this my whole story, it's all about Jesus and what he did and all the times he saved me from different just accidents or, you know, near-death experiences. I mean, it was always Jesus. But anyway, they tried to help me for a while. Even got me working with them. And boy, I learned real quick about the working habits of the River Brethren in the Mennonite community. Boy, it blew me away. I could not stay up with them. And by that time, too, my body was starting to shut down physically. Not just mentally, but physically. And I could barely do anything except get out of bed anymore. And anyway, they tried to help me for a few months. And then they knew of this place in southern Indiana called Fresh Start. And so they took me over for an interview. And I'm at this point in my life where wherever they tell me to do, I'm going to do. Because I didn't want to go live on the streets again. Because I knew if I went out there one more time, that was going to be it for me. I probably wasn't going to make it. So I ended up going to Fresh Start in November of 1993. And Abe Knepp, hallelujah, Irvin Miller, Sam Gingrich, Tim Weaver. Oh, it was probably the greatest time of my life that I look back on it, because I ended up spending a year there, but that was, you know, 5 years before that, in a prison cell, I had accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. But for the next 5 years, you really couldn't see much difference in my life. So when I got to Fresh Start, I rededicated my life to Jesus. And that's where he really got a hold of me right there and started changing my life. I mean, we had great times at Fresh Start. Oh, we went on a PR trip up through Canada and the cookouts and just the time in the classroom and the church services. Because I'd never been to church services in my whole life. So that was like, yeah, this is great. People singing, everybody's happy, and, you know, meeting new people and having people talk to you, and they're not looking down on you. You know, they're treating you like a brother, and that's like, wow. So anyway, I spent about a year there, and then when I left there in November of 94, I wasn't real sure where God wanted me to go at that time. I look back now, and maybe I should have waited a little bit longer, but anyway, I ended up going. I found my parents. They had moved down to Atlanta. My dad was running another company down there right before he retired. And I stayed with them for a while, and I was able to make amends with so many people, my parents, my family, just people out there in the world. I was able to go pay back people and make things right. Oh, and one thing, too, I shared about that story about the being on probation for 3 years. When I was at Fresh Start, Hallelujah Irvin Miller took me down to Atlanta, and it was automatic that I spend the next 3 years in jail because I had run. I took off. They were looking for me. And to this day, I cannot explain it to you, and I can't even understand it myself, but I ended up staying 3 days in jail instead of 3 years. And then I was able to go back to Fresh Start, and my whole record was cleared. And I know that that was all Jesus, and I praise him to this day for that. But after I left Fresh Start and I went down with my parents for a while, you know, I'm a big believer in the body, being around, surrounding yourself with the brothers and sisters. And when I was in, and to this day, I'm a big believer in that. And when I was in there in Atlanta with my parents, I was not going to church again. I wasn't around the body. And just little by little, I started doing things that, you know, I shouldn't have been doing. I started backsliding, is what they call it. And anyway, kind of another long story short, I had a brother that still, he was living out in Northern California then. So I ended up on a Greyhound bus 4.5 days to Northern California. And to this day, I will never ride a Greyhound bus ever again. I'd rather walk across the country, I think. But I got out there, and he already had, I mean, he welcomed me out there, but the place was already where he lived. He had a big family, and his mother-in-law was living there, and there wasn't a lot of room for me. So about the second day I was there, I ended up just, hey, I mean, I got to get out of this house for a while. And I went out for a walk, and I really went out for just a walk that night, but then I ended up coming across this. And I had been, like I said before, I started drinking a little bit already, but I ended up walking into this bar that night, and I was telling this guy my story, and this lady 3 chairs down overheard my story, so she bought me a drink, and we just started talking. And that lady, to this day, that's my wife Chrissy back there. And, yeah, 2 lost souls that God brought together as one, and is still a blessing to this day. But like I said before, she's got an incredible story herself. And God worked through her so many times to straighten me out, I'll tell you. And he still does to this day. But anyway, we spent about a year together out there, dating, broke up a couple times because she had actually quit drinking. And because she thought it would help me. I mean, it didn't take her long to figure out that I was an alcoholic. And so she was trying all these different things to help me to quit drinking. And then while we were dating, too, she actually rededicated herself to Jesus, her life to Jesus. And we were together. And then we worked things out, and we ended up getting married out there. And then we actually had our oldest daughter, Elizabeth, was born in California. And she was a month old, and we lived in this little tiny apartment in San Jose. Right on the street there, you walked out the door, you could see the drug deals going on right there. And that was something I did not need to be around. And it's something I didn't want my family to be around. So we talked, and we prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed, and we prayed, and God laid a gentleman's name, Vernon Backer, on my heart. He was the shop foreman at Fresh Start when I was there, and he lived in Westminster. He had moved there, oh, I don't know, a couple years before that to Westminster. Anyway, I somehow got his phone number and called him up, and he was like, yeah, why don't you just move here? We'll even help you out if you have, you know, if you need it, whatever, you know. And So we basically sold everything we had, and we jumped on a plane. We had enough money together to go on a plane, and we came with, it was me and my wife and my one-month-old daughter, and we basically ended up at the Atlanta airport and over to Westminster. We had just, there were the three of us, and we had basically four suitcases, and that was pretty much it, and the clothes on our back. And God has been blessing us ever since. I mean, it's been truly a miracle. It didn't start out like I thought it would when we first moved here. It was in 96, late 96 when we moved. So I thought it would kind of move a little quicker on things getting better, because I wasn't doing it every night, but I would still sneak around every once in a while and still go drink or have a drink somewhere or smoke a joint somewhere or something like that. And then there were some of the brothers in the church that really, really got a hold of me. Vernon and Joe Backer and Dallas Troyer and Malin Stolfus. And it's called Tough Love. And when you're experiencing it, it's not very fun. But I look back on it now, it's probably the best, probably one of the best things that ever happened to me in my life. And they sat me down and they were right there. They helped me and my wife, I mean, get through whatever we need to get through to try to get back on track. And so it was after that that the Lord just, I just gave it up, made a full surrender, and Jesus just took all the drugs, alcohol, cigarettes, everything to this day from that moment out of my life. And I've been free of that ever since, and that's all because of Jesus. Just wanted to share a quick story. That was about the time, too, when it was about 3 months after we lived there. I had this job with the city of Westminster, and I was enjoying it very much. And J.D. Miller was in my cell group, and he was sharing one night about how this night security guy wasn't showing up at work and wasn't calling in. He didn't know what he was going to do. And this was on a Wednesday night. And so me and Chrissy went to him afterwards and said, hey, you know, I'm miserable where I'm at. I've always heard these great things about camp. Can I come down possibly and, you know, try out for this? And he said, I'll tell you what, why don't you just start on Friday night? And I said, okay. So 2 nights later, I'm down there at the camp doing night security. The miracle about that place was that they do a criminal background check for anybody that works down there. So J.D. told me about it, and then he asked me to come into his office one day. And I just sat down for like the next hour and just laid it all out. Everything I'd ever been arrested for that I could remember, everything going back to I was 16, 17 years old, whatever first time it was. And he said, let's just pray right now. So for the next 30, 45 minutes, all we did was pray about it. So afterwards, he sent the report in, and he wasn't, honestly, here even tell you, he was not very confident that they were going to allow me to work down there. And so about a week later, he gets the report back, or however long it takes, and calls me and says, you're never going to believe this. They said, everything is fine. You're good to go. And I've been there ever since. And I just praise Jesus because of, you know, being able to be at the same place in the ministry there for 17 years, after all the jobs I went through in my old life, that was truly a miracle, and that was truly just Jesus. And I know I still have a ways to go on my working habits, but I feel like God has brought me so far in that area, and I pray He will continue to do that. As the years have gone on, I mean, God has done He's blessed us so richly. Like I said, I have my five children. You know, God is opening doors right now for me to speak at different churches and different homeless shelters, and that being able to share what He's done in my life. My wife runs a team of people down at the soup kitchen, the local soup kitchen there in town. My oldest daughter, she works at the girls' camp and does the exact same thing I do, but she does it at the girls' camp right now. So, my oldest son, he works at landscaping. I mean, it just goes on and on down the line. My children all in school, and my youngest one will be in school in a couple years. But, you know, God continues to bless me and my family. And I'll tell you, I wouldn't trade it for anything. You know, where I'm at now and where I was back then. I've had people ask me, well, it must have been neat to grow up there out in the world when you were small or growing up. And I said, you know, if I knew then what I know now, I would have traded places with them in a heartbeat. You know, people that went to Mennonite churches or even beachy churches or Amish, whatever. The world doesn't have anything to offer us. Only Jesus does. And like I said, it was just a dead end out there. But Jesus gave me my life and has given me a full life, and also with my family. One thing I'd like to leave with you that I've always shared during my testimony. There were so many miracles in my life, and I praise God for that. But I think the biggest miracle was not so much that God took, you know, the drinking, the alcohol and the drugs and all that away, which is a miracle in itself. But the true miracle to me is that I don't think about it anymore. It's the renewal of the mind that Jesus talks about. He gives us a new heart and he renews our mind. I mean, I used to think about that stuff 24/7. I even dreamed it when I slept, how I was going to get it, what I was going to do the next day to get my fix. And to see that like on a billboard now or just anything out there, it doesn't even faze me, and then it goes away just like that. And you know, to think the thoughts that I think now and compared to what I thought back then is just a true testimony to Jesus and what he does in our lives. So there's a lot more to my story, but I think I'm just going to close with that tonight. And I just want to thank you all for having me here. And I was wondering if it'd be all right if we could end with Amazing Grace, just one verse of that before I sit down.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
I want to thank you all again, and I also wanted to just share too that I was sharing about some of the stuff that's going on in our lives right now. You know, we have a full life at the camp too, and also with the church. And just being able to come and share with you all at different churches has been truly a blessing and a humbling experience for me. And I just wanted to thank you all again, and may God bless each and every one of you.